As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders. In this episode, we're going to hang out with Jeremy. Jeremy is the founder of Giant, also author of 7 books, has a new book coming out called The Voice-Driven Leader. It's going to be great. He's going to share with you his journey of becoming more aware as a leader, some life-altering events that shook him up, that caused him to be more aware, and what steps he took. So let's jump in on how you can be more purposeful, more aware, and you can be a better leader. Jeremy, welcome to the podcast.
Good to be here. Thank you. So glad to be with you.
Yeah, there's so much content we can dive into, and we definitely will get there. Before we do, high-level background, you've done a lot of work. Even kind of going back before you've entered into some of that, there was some stuff that happened in your life that kind of shook you up and put you on a different path. We talk a lot about trying to raise awareness of, like, are you where you need to be and living in your superpowers, or do you need to shift what you're doing? So I'd love if you could share some of that story with us.
Yeah, well, I've had lots of them. And so depends on the era. But I'll tell the couple of them, which is just how do you deal with resistance, right? And how do you overcome and deal with certain things? So one of the stories, when I was in my early 30s, my wife and I went to Mexico. We got trapped by a hurricane. We got moved inland. We were on our way to our hotel and a drunk driver ran a stoplight in a joyriding in a hurricane, as you do, and crushed us. And when he did, he, it basically smashed me, 9 ribs broken, internal bleeding, severed intestines. And I got the opportunity to, like, not live anymore. And so not breathing, 4.5-5 minutes, near-death experience, the whole bit. And it changes your perspective, right? So you come back to what you were doing and you're like, what is this for? Why am I doing this? It's the idea of motive. Like, do you know why? And that basically pushed me to the degree of I had to figure out why I was doing what I was doing. And when you get the why right, it, like, everything else starts getting aligned. I still drift because I'm human, but it did change the trajectory of my life, to say the least.
Wow. Were you doing something then that was purposeful that you enjoyed? You just needed to tweak it, or did you have a major shift?
A major shift. I was, I think I was a super ambitious 20 something. By the time I was 32, I had lived in Russia, started companies in Moscow, had bought 17 companies through a private equity group, started 3.coms. Started 3.com. I was just eager, like, why am I working so hard? Why was I doing that? Wow. And so it gave me an opportunity to reset and kind of do the little bit of mission. What is this about? Is it my own empire I'm trying to build, or is there a kingdom? What is it that I'm trying to do? And it gave me a chance. In fact, what happened in the car, to be more dramatic, was I got to see my life flash for my eyes. And I asked God 3 questions. Was I good? Because I was dying. Was I good man? Was I good husband? And was I good dad? And that was it. And all the other things I was doing, I didn't even think of them. I was right in the middle of starting another company. I wouldn't even think of it. Those are the only 3 things. And so as I'm dying, my wife looks over me, didn't know what I was thinking. And I look at her, shook my head like I'm gone. And she goes, I know, but I want you to know you were God's man. You were a great husband and a great dad.
Wow.
And she validated the three questions that were at the end of my life. So it was a major shift. Yeah. And when I came back, I had started this company called Giant. And when I came back, we squashed the I. They have a little I in our brand. And that stands for humility, not pride. It resembles the car accident. It was like humility versus pride.
What was it when you went through something like that? Not everyone gets an experience like that to shake them up or would even ask for that experience. How did you handle people around you that were probably like, what's going on with him? Is this, how, what did that play out like as you did make some major shifts?
Well, to be honest, it took me, so I came back, I had sold and gotten out of all those things and I was starting a brand new company. No one knew what that company was going to be. And so it took me, honestly, a couple of years. I was recuperating. I was just trying to, and I was young, but I was trying to figure it out. And it probably took me a year and a half to kind of figure out what the new norm was. It wasn't immediate. It was in my head, but it wasn't in my actions until over time. And it's, I'm 54 now and I'm still learning. How do I apply what I learned in that crazy experience that honestly, rocked me. Because we're ingrained in almost a narcissistic pattern of marketing and like gaining for what end. And, I'm around a lot of wealth. I'm around a lot of wealthy people. I live, we built a neighborhood here, 50 acres and 21 houses, just doing a lot of good things, but it's still the question of like, for what purpose? And, that's probably, it's grounded me. Now, since then, I would make the case that it's redeemed ambition. Like I'm ambitious. I'm a very ambitious person, but it's like redeemed ambition. It's okay to be ambitious. It's like just knowing what the scoreboard is, like the real scoreboard. Mm. And that's probably been the biggest thing that's affected my life.
So in the financial business, it's a very competitive business, a lot of metrics, a lot of things to be achieved, assets under management, insurance policies sold. Like it's pretty clear if you're like, are you a good advisor by those metrics or are you not a successful advisor? How do you not lose the edge? And I hear you saying that there's still ambition, there's still a spark, still an edge, yet there's like a calmness about it, lack of anxiety. How would you sum that up and then say it to an ambitious advisor that's like, I just want to manage money? And you'd say, well, why? I just want more money to manage. Okay, why? And they maybe don't have an answer.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, it's scurry leads to worry, or worry leads to scurry. They go both hand. Hustle is not bad. Hustle is secure confidence. But like, I'll give you an example. I have a mentor of mine, solid guy. He knew who he was and what he was about. And so his secure, confident humility drew people to him. And so I have another mentor of mine. He used to always say this comment. He was an old gentleman before he passed. And he was like, Jeremy, do fountains move? And I'm like, wait, what, Doug? He goes, do fountains move? I'm like, no, fountains don't move. He goes, so what do fountains do? I'm like, well, fountains, people come to fountains because they want the ambiance. They want the refreshment. They like the sound. They fountains draw people to them. Mm. And he goes, but what if the water's bad? I was like, if the water's bad or if it's not pumping, if it's not, then people go around it. They avoid it. Mm. And he goes, right, Jeremy, be a good fountain. Nice. Okay. So here, the point is that if you are full of good, I mean, if you are full of overflow, if the fruit of your effort is love and joy and goodness and patience, like if it's the fruit of your work, you don't have to go. People come to you. Mm. So the game is, if you're a transactional, I got on a call with a very famous, historically famous, I'll say in the early 2000s, author today. And and I didn't know, I was like, and I won't say his name, but I didn't know why, because we hadn't talked in a long time. And we get on there and it was barely a hi, hey, good to see you again. And he started selling me on his newest deal he's doing. And I was like, dude, I'll save David. That's not his name. I'm like, David, man, I hadn't seen you in a long time. Like, why don't we catch up first? And it wasn't, you could tell he was antsy to get to his next call. And he goes, I'll just have my assistant send you some info and she'll give you an update on what's been going on. And it was like, yeah, I'm done. There's no desire. And the interesting part is he's talking about networking. Like, that's his thing. But it was so disingenuous, and it was an appearance that he needed something. And so it's like a vibe. It's like, have you ever been around someone who's, they're looking for a job? They're like, hey, can you help me? Like, I'm really, and that vibe they put off,
yeah,
you put up a wall, like, ugh. Because when you're not at peace, it's hard to refer you. I don't want to refer someone who's not at peace to someone else.
Yeah.
So.
What would you say? I think back to when I was a young advisor, and there was this anxious energy of like, I need to make money and pay my bills. You know, the goal was eventually get to a point where it's like, hey, I don't have to worry about those things anymore. And then it's like, okay, then it's a good problem to have when you're like, hey, I have more opportunity than I need. And how do you coach somebody through? And I know a lot of the work you've done to where they can find that necessarily before the components of their life allow that to be a little more natural and easy.
There's a famous prophet. His name is Mick Jagger. And he says, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you might find that you get what you need. And there's a big difference between needs and wants. So my wife and I do an exercise and we review it every year. It's like, okay, what do we need to live on? Mm-hmm. And then like, what could we live on? Okay, there's a difference, right? And the need to live on is like, yeah, that's giving in there, that's retirement in there, that's all those things. Now, what could we live on? It's a little bit lower. Now, what do we want to live on? That's a whole nother game. And a lot of people take their needs and wants and they flip them. They just don't understand. And so, you know, doing needs is a good old fashioned budget to go, what do we need? And we've gotten it to the point we laugh. My wife and I, we have like, we know how many Christmas gifts we're buying or the budget we have for Christmas gifts. And we have one budget, the needs budget, that's fully baked in on everything we're going to do. Here's how many trips we're going to take. And so what that does is it gives you a number and then you're like, yeah, I need to cover that. And then what's my, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, so I have a number of different revenue streams. I'm like, ideally, I need them to come in at this. Then my needs are covered. Then we've started to do something really interesting. We've started to create like what is above and beyond? And X percent is just literally given away. And then what do you do with that extra percent? So having a plan for it, but just getting to your needs budget gives peace of mind, because a lot of people feel like they should be earning more. And it's almost like this nervous habit.
So it's arbitrary, you'd say, as most people have not done that exercise and therefore they don't, the anxiety is coming from more of a, just more is better than like a true.
Or when they take their kids to the carpool and they see the buddy who just got a new vehicle and they're keeping up with the Joneses, or their friends that they're in a club with and they just got back from, you know, from Jackson Hole and then blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And all that stuff puts this pressure. And so what happens if you're not aligned with your spouse on this, then you get spousal pressure. And so it's almost like, well, what pressure's coming from, to the dude or to the wife? Where's the pressure and who's it coming from? And is it real pressure or is it fake pressure? And most people just haven't done the work to have the hard conversation about needs.
Yeah, that's good. Could you unpack the Peace Index for us? Like kind of backstory of it and then the application of it. I think that for our listeners, again, our competitive entrepreneurs, they love the drive. Obviously, that's the way you're wired. Yet, I would say all of them desire peace along the way.
Okay, so the idea, first I'll say peace is power. And power is meant to reset peace. When you're at peace, you have the ability to empower peace. But when you're not at peace, you'll overpower it, trying to get peace. Yeah. So the idea of peace, just basically, we've kind of created an index that breaks it down in five segments. There's purpose, there's people, there's personal health, there's provision, and there's place. So if you want to do a quick assessment, you take 1 through 100. 100 is the highest. Give yourself a number. So let's just play. You're up. You want to play?
Do it.
Okay. Where are you in your purpose? 1 through 100. Give me a number. How at peace are you? How much of what you do matches who you are right now?
85.
See how easy that was? You came to a number? Okay. When you get to people are the top 10 people in your life. How at peace are you with the people that you live and work around? That you see a majority of the time. How at peace are you?
70.
And that's an interesting one because you have to, sometimes you can't control, you know, can't control their people. So mm-hmm. other people's lack of peace might affect your level of peace. Okay. So it's really interesting. Personal health, mental, physical, spiritual, holistic, 1 through 100.
90 at this point.
Okay. 90. Yep. And when you get to provision is how at peace are you? How many, do you have enough? Do you have what you need to live the life you're living? Not do you have what you want, but do you have what you need?
I'm pretty content, 95.
Very good, 95. And then the last one is your place. It's your spaces and places, your house, your office, your neighborhood, your city, location, region, all that.
80.
Okay. All right. So you take all of them, divide by 5, and you're at a good 84% over your head. And this number is over your head right now. So you can pop it almost like a video game. You can populate it over your head. And your lowest number, if you wanted to really move the needle, you go and work on the lowest number. And if you want to go in even deeper for those listening, it's just the Peace Index book. It gives every detail in every one of these sections. So you can go get the Peace Index book. It's a really good book. Really fast read, but really, really potent. So you're at 84. So if you're lowest, so what you need to do now is which one is your driver? Which one is most important to you? For most guys in your industry, it's usually purpose. It's usually a driver, maybe sometimes people. And so your purpose was pretty high. Your lowest was people.
People.
So the question is, can you change that? Can you control any controllables there? And if you can, then you work on it. If you can't, then you have to deal with it, right? Yeah. But in either case, you can move that number up from a 70 to, let's say, an 80, and your peace index will jump dramatically.
The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you.
Was that something you just used to do in your head and you put words to it? What was the origins of that exercise?
I actually heard a sermon in England when we were living in England at this little Anglican country church, and the guy had heard a story about purpose and people, and he added in a little bit about place, and over time we added in personal health, and we added in provision as well. So it was the idea that these are the categories that usually trip people up. Hmm. And it's like giving a practical, even doing the exercise brings peace, because you're like, all right, what do I need to do to reset? What kind of power do I need to reset the peace in that area? So
do you find in doing that with people that people are, one, aware enough to give a true answer, or like comfortable saying it out loud? Do they have to get somebody else's input usually to get a more true answer?
No, I mean, I've done this, I don't even know how many thousands of times. And I've never had an issue. People usually know it very quickly. And I've been with some of the wealthiest people. I've been with some of the most difficult I mean, I've done it in prisons before. I did it with a group of prisoners, and it was, you know, it's almost like control what they can control. Inside the prison, their place is not very high, but you know, it's still applicable.
Yeah, that's good. With the other work you've done, with Five Voices, Five Gears, the 100X Leader, I'd love to tap into the 100X Leader, some of the biggest takeaways from that. I found most advisors are entrepreneurs, whether they know it or not, even though they come into the business maybe to sell stuff. They're like, wait, this is actually a business. And then if you want that business to thrive without controlling you or consuming you, your full potential usually requires other people to help. And then all of a sudden they become a leader, whether they like it or not. What would you speak to that kind of realization of people that are leaders, whether they're resistant to it or they're trying to become better in that?
Well, I would even make the case even more than that. And in fact, I have a new book that's just coming out called The Voice-Driven Leader. But the idea is if you, the metaphor in the 100X Leader is the Sherpa. And the best leaders in the world are the Sherpa on Mount Everest. And I kind of just give an ode to them and kind of a call up saying, these guys are amazing. And in that process, what happens is 100 stands for health, X stands for multiplication. So the idea is that you have to be the healthiest person. So a Sherpa has to climb while helping people climb. So that's the metaphor of leadership. So if you're leading customers, if you're a Sherpa to your customers, you have to perform yourself. No one wants to follow the asthmatic Sherpa. You know, it's like you need the healthiest Sherpa. So you have to follow the same rules you're giving. You have to do the work and you have to lead. But if you have a team of people, the idea is you're just a Sherpa and you're basically helping people perform. So what do you need to multiply to them? What do you need to intentionally transfer? What wisdom? I mean, I was just talking to another gentleman here recently, and he was like, man, I have spent most of my career being a solopreneur, and I wish I had developed people along the way. If I could, he was basically admiring what we've done. He was like, if I had developed people, I would have had the infrastructure that you have with these different people. Yeah. And it's like the idea is you're always multiplying. If you are around people, if people report to you, it's your responsibility to develop them, including your kids. So developing your kids is the intentional transfer of knowledge and wisdom and skills that they need, which will benefit you as well.
Do you find when you start working with people like that, it feels like it'd be easier to jump to the strategies and tactics of like teaching people things as opposed to kind of looking and saying like, am I at 100 yet? Like, am I the healthy Sherpa? Am I qualified yet to lead other people?
So I have a process of like, you do it as you go. I'm not one that goes, oh, you need to go to a monastery for 3 years and be around the monks and the nuns and let them, you know. I'm like, no, you learn as you go. So I have a process every day. In fact, I think, it is in the Peace Index book. I think it's like chapter 8 of that book. I have a process that it describes how I keep the peace every day. So what I do is I have this process where in the mornings I do a call-up exercise. I remind myself who I am. I then kind of look for people of peace during the day. And then in the afternoon at 5:30, every 5:30 of every day, I do an examine and I go, what was awesome about today? What am I thankful for? And I might text someone like, hey, good to meet you. So good. Two, it's where was I off today? Where was I not at peace?
Yeah.
And what that does, that process is so meaty because I find my tendencies. I was so mad at so-and-so. Why was I mad at them? Was it them or was it me? And I'm usually, it was me. Oh my gosh, I'm so impatient sometimes. Huh, why am I impatient? And I then do this little journey loop, like this tendency log. Is that a tendency of mine? Yeah, when does it happen? Why does it happen? What do I tend to do? I play detective on myself. I found I have 32 tendencies. And I've found that over the last 8 years of doing this work, that I have 32 tendencies. And so by doing it, it's like, my point is that if I am a leader, I have to be the healthiest on the mountain. So that alone should if you're listening to this and you're a goer, if you're a real doer, you should be leading yourself first thing, because leadership is really three things. It's personal leadership, relational leadership, and professional leadership. A lot of people are really good at professional leadership, which means how do they run meetings? How do they do strategy sessions? How do they, you know, communicate and do reporting? Well, that's one part of it. Relational leadership is leading other people, but personal leadership is no hypocrisy. What's it like to lead myself?
I think looking back to my journey, the first one felt fairly simple, and there was enough books or things I could kind of copy to do the business strategic leadership. Here's the structure of a meeting. Here's this, like, follow step by step. I think it was the other two that required, you know, to sit in some tension, to not, you know, run from the arena. And I don't know if that's work a lot of people are doing proactively, or if it is the, hey, I'm going to stay in it and I'm being refined over time. What do you find, and as we wrap up, the level of intentionality is related to the level of peace or personal success, whether that's financial or other metrics? What have you experienced in that?
I've found that life is a marathon, and the most influential years in life are 55 to 72 years old. So you subtract 55 from your current age, and that's how much time, that's how much, so how old are you?
38.
So subtract, so you've got, you know, 17 years of learning to get you to your true influence years. So if you think of it, life as a marathon, build the relationships, pour into people, develop people, all that stuff. Most people play for this quarter or for this calendar year, and then they miss the relationships. So pour into people, develop them as you go, keep working on your own tendencies, so that the time you get to 55 to 72, you're at peace with yourself. You're not scurrying. You're not worrying. You've got people you can rely on. Like, that's the long haul. That's the marathon that most people just aren't prepared for.
Yeah. These 32 tendencies, because there's habits that you can change. When you create these tendencies, are these, you can become more aware and try to minimize the impact it has on you, but they're not going away? Or is this list changed for you over time?
It's one tendency. I have a tendency to be defensive. I know I will always have a tendency to be defensive. So these tendencies are things I'll always have a tendency to do. But I now know when it happens, and I know it. I have a trade up. I have a hack that is almost a different, when I get triggered, don't do this, go here, use your trade up. And I trade up to a different hack. And that tends to keep me away from my habits.
So then the effort is not trying to like change that tendency, as more so create a framework that helps you.
Beat myself up with a tendency. I bring grace and truth. So support and challenge. So I go, you know what? Yeah, I have a tendency to get defensive. That's okay. I don't judge myself anymore on that. And it's been unbelievable. So then what happens now is I go, great. So now I call myself up. Dude, this is who you are. That's all right. You know your trade up. Go here. And so I'm working on myself as I'm going. And it's a much, much better way to live.
Yeah, that's a great takeaway. All right, my friend, I appreciate you.
Good to see you.
For everybody listening, there's 100X Leader, Five Gears, The Five Voices, your new book.
The Voice-Driven Leader.
Voice-Driven Leader.
Yeah, it's my seventh book. Nice. So, so The Voice-Driven Leader, it is literally all about developing people. It is the quintessential field guide. If you want to develop other people, you need to know who you are. You need to know what voice they are. You need to know where they are on the development map. And you need to know how to get to the next level. So it's a really potent book. And then we use Five Voices AI to help do that.
That's great. I appreciate you. Thanks for being
here. Thanks, man.